This is episode 10.
Woo!
It's actually the 11th one that we've recorded, but it's officially episode 10.
I did forget about that one. when you said actually, and I'm just sitting here going like, what is he talking about? What happened? And it's like, oh yeah. What happened with that? It was intentionally lost. It was left on the curb on a road somewhere in the middle of a forest to fend for itself.
quietly put to sleep.
Jesus. Okay, that's the mood for today. Fantastic.
Yeah, episode 10. And when we set out on this, I mean, it's almost 6 months since we started doing this, which feels kind of crazy because we met in October at DemoFest, and then we kind of, we didn't start recording, I think, until December. I feel like we recorded just before Christmas, didn't we? And then we put everything out in January. Because we went live with 3 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Started January. Yeah. End of January. Yeah. And now we're here and it's the end of April and it's episode 10. And being completely transparent, when we set out, we were both podcast listeners and we were like, oh, what is the average number of episodes that podcasts get to? And it's some crazy high percentage. Don't even get to 10. So go us for getting to 10.
We made it.
We did it. We're in double digits. Woo-hoo. But no, it's good. It's been good. It's been a learning curve, shall we say?
Oh yeah. Steep.
And I like to think that anyone that's been listening since the beginning, first of all, thank you. And also, I really hope that you noticed that the uptick in quality, particularly from my side, learning to not have my mic cranked to 11 on the gain and speak into it directly and talk really loudly.
I'm also happy to inform everyone that I no longer spend 14 hours editing an episode. It has cranked down to an average between 3 to 6. And I think with this one, I have a couple of new tricks that I want to try to lower it even further. So I can actually not spend most evenings editing this thing. Because as much as I appreciate Paul, and I do appreciate you, Paul, thank you for being my co-host for the last 10 episodes. That sounds very final. It sounds like you're finishing off. I don't mean to say... Hold on. Sorry. What I wanted to say is thank you for being my co-host. And also, I now know the form and the visual of all of your mouth noises. I can recognize every sound you make. I don't think I have ever been this close to someone in my whole existence where I can recognize them in taking a breath.
No, I don't think I can recognize that. So that's an achievement. The things that you learn.
Now that you're thoroughly uncomfortable, no, I do think...
I can just see you coming through going... breathing in, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing in, taking a breath.
If only you knew. I do. Maybe actually when we meet up in person at the end of May, I will show you actually how it all looks like. I don't know if that'll make you feel better or not. It's definitely going to be... Don't cry, it's fine. It's okay.
I've just been cutting onions.
No, but... I knew we were going to get to 10, be it via force or via just, you know, I had the willpower for us to push through. What I didn't expect is for it to get easier and easier and more pleasant as we go along. Mm-hmm. My biggest fear was that it was going to become a chore. It was going to become a job. It has yet to become that. There are some days where it's a little bit harder to record than others and some very last minute edits. But at the end of the day, it is more of a... It still has that nice, pleasant feeling of, hey, I get to spend a couple of hours uninterrupted just talking to Paul about random stuff. So, quite nice. And also, thanks everyone for listening to exactly what that is, which is just us having a chat. So, thank you.
Well saved. And I think we both had the same fear that we would run out of things to talk about. Or at least run out of things to talk about that are of interest to somebody else to listen to, because we've become close enough that we can kind of obviously sit and have conversations about many things, But there's a difference, and I think this is my biggest lesson that I've learned. There's a big difference between what you talk about in the context of recording a podcast, how you talk in that context, and how you talk outside of it. And I think it's, I've listened to so many for so many years, and you think, oh, that's just like people having a conversation. And it does sound like that, but you're also now kind of acutely aware of the kind of almost like performative aspect of it. And it's not a bad thing. It's just how you change your communication style and how you speak and how you form sentences. And particularly for me, as someone who is particularly bad at not finishing a thought or getting halfway through a thought and then jumping to the next one and not finishing it, which I definitely did early on, and I've worked really hard to do less, is one of those things where like you have to consciously kind of come at it. And also, as well as, and I knew that editing was going to be a big thing going in, the other thing that I've learned that is really, really helpful if you want to make this easier, to your point, is actually doing a bit of prep. Actually having a think about, hey, what should we talk about today? Because otherwise the conversation becomes quite stilted because you have that thing in the back of your mind, which is, this is going to be really boring to listen to. But on that note, we're kind of changing the structure of the show a little bit. Is that fair? Or we're not changing it. We're putting in a structure to it.
Yeah.
Would be maybe better way to say it. Yeah. Putting in a structure.
Because that would insinuate that there was a structure to begin with, which there was not.
There might have been. It was just an.
Right.
Staircase. I think we did toy very early on with this idea of having segments, and we're like, we can't have segments, and we're now not having segments because we're not suddenly doing the same thing every week.
They're not called segments, they're just called
chapters.
Themes.
Themes.
Anything but segments, it seems. look, listen, yeah, we're laughing, but names matter, right? Because it does put you in like a mindset. With segments, you start feeling like an old-timer, like radio show host of like, you know, in today's segment of talking to people on the phone. Like, this is how we do things. It's like, we don't do those things. Let's not do those things.
No.
Topics, themes.
No. Yeah, topics, themes. Having a theme to discuss, a topic to discuss. Today's topic being AI, because we've made it to 10 episodes and we talked kind of tangentially about it, but not really in any depth. But actually taking the, every time we record, picking a theme, which one of us will go away, research, and then kind of come back and then we'll have a conversation about it. And that's not that the kind of the style is going to change in any way. It's just that we're maybe going to kind of come at it with a bit more preparation and here's how we're going to talk through it. Because I think as well, we want this to be sustainable and we want this to be something that, you know, we have continued to enjoy it and that ensure it doesn't become a job. And I think really at the core of that is making sure that we still kind of get on to record, even if we're not always feeling like really amped up every time, that we at least want to have a conversation and that we have something to discuss in that conversation. So there's going to kind of, you might see that there's like, we're not going to be kind of telegraphing stuff like, hey, this is the intro, this is another main bit, and then this is now the outro, because again, they're not segments, but there will be a theme, there will be a kind of a main portion to each episode in which we dive into a topic.
We're also hoping this is going to help with some of the feedback we're getting on how easy it is to find things across the episodes. We will do our best to start, you know, putting in like, you know, extra note, like to the point where Paul was making around, you know, being more sustainable, having more time to do other bits, is just making this a lot more easy to digest when it comes to information. If you want to refer back to something, if you want to look into something, there's many different ways we can do that, and we are going like looking into. Practically, I'm looking into at least three of them. It's just about like actually figuring it out. It's a learning experience at the end of the day, but that part is really important to us for it to be easily digestible. Whilst the conversation is nice, and we're never gonna move away from this conversational way, and I'm very confident saying never, because this is the only way I can think I can do this. Like, I don't think we'll ever have a script or preset points or anything like that. It's always going to be a conversation. So you're never going to lose that feeling. It's just about making it easier, one, to digest, second, to share, three, to go back into. And we're really hoping that a couple of the nuanced changes that we're going to be implementing are going to help with that as we're going forward.
I want to share a bit of that. So we've talked in the last few episodes about maybe why the internet is not such a pleasant place anymore. And I think that's a topic we're probably going to come back to a lot more. But I also just want to take maybe 1-2 minutes just to say that I think I've found my favorite app ever, which is not me being hyperbolic. I genuinely struggle to think of an application. I mean, excluding the fact that I now have Todoist on my phone or mobile banking, those kind of pragmatic day-to-day things, in terms of an app that makes my life better, that has seen a significant improvement in it, just going to shout out Feedbin, which, if you are like me, someone who likes reading on the internet or likes reading what is published on the internet but hates reading on the internet, go check out Feedbin. It is the closest thing to Google Reader, and I know, again, I've previously extolled my love and grief at the loss of Google Reader, but Feedbin is the closest thing. You can get free trial for 30 days, and then it's $5 a month. It has a web app, it has a mobile app, and you can just take all your RSS feeds, you can take your YouTube subscriptions as well, and this is the kicker for me that makes it just takes it to that next level. I can take my subscribe channels, I can subscribe to them in Feedbin. I still get the adverts that are for the readouts, but there's no other ads. And more importantly, there's no short. it's clean. It's a clean experience.
I think this is an important point just to mention, that we're not being paid or sponsored by
No, we're not. Although, if anyone from Feedbin hears this and would like to sponsor us, we're open to the conversation.
No, but Paul has been talking at me about Feedbin for what feels like months now. And I am yet to get on board, mostly because, and maybe just a bit of a warning for folks that are getting excited about this, just listening to Paul, getting on it is actually quite difficult, and it's a web-only app, and it's not, so there isn't an appy app for the phone.
There is an appy app.
There is an appy app? There wasn't an appy app.
I found, there wasn't, there is now, I found one.
Okay, never mind, I retract that statement.
Yes, no, there is an appy
okay. app. So then the onboarding is not as straightforward as I thought it would be. Fair enough, I didn't spend a huge amount of time. But for example, I struggled to get the RSS feed for the YouTube stuff.
Okay.
I know that's given enough time, I would have figured it out. But it was more of I had a look, I logged in, I tried to put some things in, it wasn't as easy. So folks, all I'm saying is just spend some time doing this, get yourself in the mood and actually, work on getting that and sorting that out for yourself if you're interested in having that sort of feed in your life. It wasn't as straightforward as I was expecting, because my solution to removing shorts and everything else on YouTube was just to remove YouTube from my phone. Which is
that as well.
It's sort of bringing a gun to a knife fight, really. It wasn't necessary, but it was the fastest and easiest way for me to really solve that problem.
But what's funny though is that I found myself watching more content from channels I subscribe to than I was before.
Because that's all you have. Mm-hmm. You can't just browse anymore. You have to watch the things that you actually subscribe to. And I wonder as well if it starts making you question, who the heck am I subscribed to?
It does that as well. And yep. And I actually, it's funny that you mentioned that it takes a bit of effort to kind of get set up. I would recommend doing it in the web browser. That's where I set it up. You create an account, you add all your feeds in, you can organize them into different columns and by tags. And then that will obviously sync onto mobile devices. It's one of those things where it's made me think very intentionally about what I watch, about what I read. I have pulled the Substacks into there that I subscribe to. The only thing I would say is I've not yet found a consistent way to, if you subscribe to a Substack, to kind of get that walled content in. So if it's a paid only one, which some are, that may be a kind of a slight gap, but again, quite a lot of these things will create a personalized RSS feed, because that's what it's based upon, RSS feed. So yes, it requires a bit more effort to kind of get set up, but it is absolutely worth the time and investment to do it. And they give you 30 days to trial it. So it's not like some things where it's like you have 5 days, and if you don't like it after 5 days, then you kind of... And I think, again, for the price of a coffee a month, you can kind of play with it. I've subscribed to more expensive things for longer that I've used less. It has become an app that I use and the site that I use every single day, multiple times a day. Which is, you know, kind of, for me, I'm like, right, that justifies it. And it's actually noticeably improved the relationship that I have with the content I'm consuming on the internet, which is, again, something that we've talked about before.
Also, Paul, mm-hmm. You do realise we just created a segment. Paul's App of the Week.
Lydia, I want to talk to you about AI today, because AI is everywhere and it's the future.
Is it?
Or is it? Dun, dun, dun.
I'm trying very hard to not showcase my like, I think I'm starting to develop a habit on the podcast of having like a quite radical and negative opinion on a lot of things. I'm gonna do it differently today. I'm gonna be team tech optimist, because I am a tech optimist. No, genuinely. Yes. Hold on, let me try. Yeah, let me try.
Yeah, okay.
Give
it's
me
funny
minutes.
Because you've called me out for being a tech pessimist before.
Well, no, just listening back to a couple of episodes, like, I'm very much of a, you know, oh yeah, no, this thing, not great, right, because of this very extreme reason. So let me try to be quite mild today and relatively positive, because I do think there's a lot of things out there that are, you know, developing for the better. This is going to be my challenge for me today. If I slip into negativity, I want you to call me out. Okay. We'll get there. It's a slope that at some point I'm going to step into, and I'm just going to keep on slipping down. There's no coming out. But until then, Paul, what do you want to talk about AI today? My favorite subject.
On that, and I would ask you to do me the same favor, because this is a topic which I very easily slip into ranty, pessimist mode about as
well.
Oh,
it's okay. I could just edit you out. It's fine.
That's fine. But no, I think so. So shout out actually to our second listener. We have Tom, who listens, but also Alice Egan, who, if you don't know who Alice is, go check out her newsletter, go check out her LinkedIn, who actually said, I'd love to hear you talk about AI. And it's in particular its application into what we do in the world that we're in technical sales, in sales, in B2B. So I think it's kind of not coming at it from just an AI overall, and we can get into that. And I think there's definitely a conversation to be had about AI. But I do also want to make sure that we maybe talk a bit more about what it means, what does it mean for us, if anything. And I think in the coming up for 18, 20 months since ChatGPT launched, what are the predictions that perhaps, you know, even I made a year ago that I go, maybe that's not going to happen now. And I think it's interesting as well, because the perspective on what we can do with it and how we can use it has changed quite a lot, even the last 6 months. If I think about where we were at the end of 2023, now where we are at end of April 2024, I think the conversation is quite different when it comes to AI.
Can I start with a broad question to you? Are you using ChatGPT on a daily basis? Are you using any of the AI tools on a daily basis outside of work?
No.
Are you using them at work?
Very occasionally. And that is a change from December last year.
Right. So was it more in December last
mm-hmm,
year?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. How often would you say you're using them right now?
Very, very little. But
like once a month,
once a week. I might go, because context for this, I was trialing the GPT-4 again, talking about stuff that you pay for that costs a lot. That's like not a lot of money, but it's enough money that I notice like $24 going out of my account every month, to the point where I'm kind of starting to do that. You know, how much is it costing me to use every time I go? Every time I use this, it's decreasing the overall cost of it. So, if something costs me $10 a month, if I use it 20 times, that's 50 cents for every use. And it's quite a blunt way of looking at these things. But actually, I did it with ChatGPT and I found myself using it maybe once a week. And I was going, is this worth $6? This use I'm getting out of it. And I was like, it was not worth it at all. It was when I was comparing it to what the results I was getting from the free version. So that's what's changed.
There is a huge difference, though. So we have so me and my partner share like the paid version, which makes it a lot cheaper per use because we use it actually. It's really helpful.
Yeah.
I do use it quite a lot. I would say maybe on average once a day, twice a day.
Okay.
For various things, it really. So I guess sort of showcase like where it sort of hit me really hard and when I really started using it was back when I was working at VMware. And I had to do a session, but I just couldn't figure out a good name for it. So I did a lot of brainstorming things with, you know. And at the end of the day, whilst it didn't give me, and I think that was a learning curve for me, it didn't give me the result I wanted, but it helped me, help guide my brain into what I wanted. So then, you know, got the right, you know, title and everything. So things I've learned over time is that I will not use any AI tools for content generation. I will use it for brainstorming. I will use it to get me out of like being stuck in an idea. Sometimes I get unstuck thanks to just being, oh, this is really bad. Like, why am I asking this thing for help? Like, let me just go do it myself. But even that's a useful tool to have just to get you out of your rut of creativity when you're out trying to produce something, a piece of content. The other thing I found it really useful for has been practicing language skills. We're traveling to Berlin in July, and I have forgotten quite a bit of my German. So I've been using it almost as a language learning buddy to keep me... Because it now it has the capacity to remember quite a bit. So it remembers, for example, like the list of words I've remembered. I'm not going to go into details exactly how I use it. There's a lot of... sure there are more specific tools that use GPT as a backend for language learning or for most of the tasks that I use it day in and day out. I quite like everything being in one place because it does make it feel like I have... You know, if only I could put folders, you know, my love for folders. If I could put all of the chats in there, that would be even better. But really, it has been an evolution from using it just for specific things with work when I was still an active on-field SE to then moving into, I'm starting a business. How the heck do I do things? Please help, right? And just, you know, give me some ideas and I will ignore most of them. But hey, one or two of these actually let me down a route that I wanted to take. And then for the daily stuff of I'm stuck on this one problem or I'm stuck on this one project or I want to move forward, like I don't know how to do it, or hey, speak German with me or speak Danish. So that's why I think my use has actually been quite stable throughout that time. I think there was definitely the annoying thing, and that's how I know that I was using it a little bit more at the beginning, was that I was hitting the limit a lot more often. I don't know where the limit is now because I never reach it. I do also wonder if it's just because I don't know. I'm pretty sure that they don't share these numbers, but I'm pretty sure the user base has also significantly dropped off.
I think it has. Well, I think there's been a lot more competition, and I think I have my problem is people talk about AI, and AI has become, for kind of want of a better way, the kind of the new blockchain. And it's the thing, it's the marketing branding that a lot of companies put on a product and go, this now has AI, when in reality what you've done is buy a ChatGPT integration, which has a lot of use cases and large language models.
Don't you also feel that it's a lot more of a AI is the answer, what was the question thing as well?
Exactly, yes. How does, I think the, I have yet to see a compelling case for AI, for a quote unquote AI product that will address a problem that I have today. And let's take a real world one. So again, taking that kind of view, and I think, again, you call it a hot take, but it's kind of true, that 95% of AI startups have just brought a ChatGPT integration, Which maybe that's what they've done, right? And if you're doing something original and inventive with it, and I know there were some original and inventive ideas out there, then great. But I guess where I'm coming from with the blockchain comment is I don't think it's this transformative, like, invention. It's not the iPhone, right? It's the kind of smartphones that came before that. And what I mean by that is the iPhone was not the first smartphone, but it was the first one that made it mass market and accessible. And suddenly people went, aha, this is the answer to the question, and it's doing so in an easy way. This is the answer to the question, what if I could have emails, have internet access that was reliable? Because, you know, internet access kind of existed on BlackBerrys, and email was on BlackBerrys, and BlackBerry Messenger was a thing, but it was not unified in the same way that Apple offered it. And I kind of look and I go, right, okay, so these are the things. And for me, I go, well, I think I'm still maybe searching for that use case. I tried a few out, and I think I still go back to ChatGPT, and that's the one I use, right? And I guess when I talk about AI, I'm really talking about large language models at the moment, because AI as well, we should be kind of worth clarifying, it encompasses a lot of other stuff. It's not just the text-based large language model, which is kind of just clever predictive text on one level. There's other stuff they've certainly added to it, but that's kind of what it is. But yeah, I think you've nailed it, which is if this is the answer, what is the problem? Which is like something that we also do. If you're in pre-sales and in tech sales, you're like, you're having to answer that every day with your prospects. You're going, well, here's a problem that I think you have. And like I say, I've yet to see a compelling problem. But it's interesting for you. So you're saying that you're using it for brainstorming.
Yes.
So is that something that you had a problem with before you started using it?
Yes. I didn't have someone to talk things through with. And it sounds very sad. I don't mean it in that way. I mean it more in the sense of, and I'll give you a specific example. I host art classes in the local community that I volunteer for. The best way for me to think is to speak out loud to someone and just talk through those things. I couldn't imagine me bothering the people around me with the minutiae details of what we're going to do in week 6 of that art class, because I do it by myself. If I was working together with someone on this project, that wouldn't be a problem, right? But I already, you know, I didn't want to, you know, and just to, again, to clarify, I'm not being a sad loner. I didn't want to fill up the airspace I had with friends and family to talk about, again, the minutiae of the things that I wanted to do. But that was the only way I knew how to do it. So really, it filled that space really well of just having someone that I can throw half-baked ideas at, and for it to put some structure around it, to fill in some gaps that I have, give me some ideas that more often than not are not good ideas, but to give me the space to go, like, actually, funnily enough, I have found out that bad ideas help me as much as good ideas do, because it shows me what the path is not in a weird way. It's like, oh, you want to do this thing at week, you know, back to the idea, the example with the course. You want to do this thing at week 6? Absolutely not. So what is the alternative? It's like, oh, it's this other thing. Great. Thank you. Like, you know, it didn't help at all. But yeah, it still did. But to your point about, like, it's not just, you know, text prediction models in a nutshell. That is the only one at the moment that I feel comfortable using. And I had a play with the video creation ones. I don't want to name any names for some reason. I don't know why.
No, nor do I.
But yeah. But so I did try one of the video creation ones. It didn't go well. The trailer and the promise that they made definitely didn't fit the bill. And then at the exact same time, the moment I put in the prompt, and I know a lot of, you know, if we do have AI fanboys and girls listening to this, they're gonna go like, oh, put us all in the prompt. It's like, no, I tried their own, like, you know, recommended prompts, and, like, you know, I did some prompt engineering. It's like, you know, I've looked into this stuff, okay? Like, I didn't just say, you know, make something pretty and expected something pretty, right? That wasn't the case. And it really struggled, and the results felt underwhelming at best. And I know we see these videos, especially like on social media, where we're like, oh, look at this great, like, you know, cherry blossom streets with a car in the middle of a... That's a very well curated one prompt, and second, you know, sequence of footages together. And also, the thing that I'm never gonna get away from is this idea of, like, where did this come from? Mm-hmm. Who did you steal this from? Mm-hmm. I have the same problem with image generation. I tried that one a couple of times, and when I could see my favorite artists work being used for this because it looks exactly like this artist's work or this other artist's work. And I'm like, nope, absolutely not interested. I don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Same thing happened with the video. And it's just, so those two things are completely dead to me. I feel less so about text. And I don't know why. I don't know why my brain makes that line of like text, image and video is not acceptable, but text is.
I have a problem with text as well. I have a problem with the generative part of generative AI, which is what you're talking about, but is also what is tied up in a number of very high profile ongoing lawsuits around the material that was used to train these models. And the kind of sidebar to that is the fact that you're now seeing licensing deals coming out. I think there was one very recently with the Financial Times in London to train large language models on this data, because the problem is they've run out of data to train on. And the issue that is sort of coming down the tracks is that you're going to end up with large language models being trained on data that was generated by a large language model, which just like steadily gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, because you're getting it's actually getting into a concept which is Plato's table, which this is kind of this concept of having the perfect table doesn't exist. It only exists in the mind of the artist. What the artist creates is the imitation of his idea of a table, and every subsequent copy is therefore like a fractional, it gets worse as you copy it. So the best way I can describe it is if you take a page of a book and you photocopy it, right, you'll get like a probably quite a good copy, but it's slightly degraded. If you photocopy that page again, then it's going to kind of go down. And if you continue to do that and that's essentially what we're trying to do with large language, you just copy and copy and you get down to like copy 100 and it's really faint and you can't read it. And you're then kind of trying to fill in the gaps. So the further away you get from the original idea, the worse it is and the less connected it is to that original idea. And I think that's the danger that we really live in with. I'm going to kind of touch on one more use case that I have a problem with. What I would say is like one of those common use cases that I see get thrown around in the world of B2B and sales. And that one, interestingly, contrary to what you were talking about, which is kind of having something to bounce ideas off of, is this idea of using them as a research tool. And I have first-hand experience of this because I started out using GPT 3.5, went up to GPT 4, so I went, hey, it searches the internet, and went, this could be really helpful in my account planning, in my research for opportunities that I'm about to go into. And I've heard people just talk about this, and there are startups built up around this idea, right, that you can use quote-unquote AI-assisted research. The problem is that they're generative and they hallucinate information.
Makes stuff up.
Precisely. And do you know what? I found myself and I thought, I had like a handful of opportunities that I was looking at. And I thought, I'm going to go and I'm going to say, give me some stuff about these companies. But I then found myself having to go and cross-check the information that it had given me. So it didn't save me any time.
The best way I've had someone describe this, and it's not, you know, I'm quoting this, was imagine that ChatGPT is not the best intern you have around, right? And it's up to you then to make a decision. Is that effort useful or not? Because sometimes having that intern might be more hindered, because like they're not going to learn as an intern does. It's not a human being that's worth teaching. It's a multi-billion dollar corporation behind it. So yeah, just imagine it's an intern you don't care about, and it's not doing a really good job at it either. I've tried many a ways to get around this by asking for quotes specifically, for it to cite things, tell me exactly from which line, where did it find it, and I'm getting various results. Most of the time I bog down the prompt so much that it really doesn't get anywhere. So for the research side of things, unless you're using me as, again, the engine behind this, yet you're putting a lot of parameters around it, you're feeding it a different set of data to learn from, like research papers. I know there's a couple of products out there that are looking into how when it comes to like science research and actually citing papers and reading through them, which that could be massive if it works. I'm not in that field. I cannot say if it works or not, but it doesn't work on those, you know, out of the box GPT and expecting it, even for it, or whatever is going to happen next. You're going to face the same problem, which is what it's doing is, as you said, predicting what's the most plausible word that's going to come next based on the data.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean it's the correct one. It means it's the right one. So I wouldn't use it for research in the classical way of what would, let's say, CEO of a pharmaceutical company, what would they care about?
Hmm.
I wouldn't use it for that. I would use it as I have this deal. I am lost. I don't know what to do next. Help. And it sort of gives you some pointers and some ideas of what to look into and what to... We had that with a project at home, like we're doing some home automation. That is exactly what we did. It's like, we have this plan. This is what we want to do. Where should we start looking? And it gave us like 20 different steps, 7 of them. That's the only way I can envision this being used as part of our, you know, others outside of the brainstorming thing that I was using it for. Mm-hmm. For the research part, I wouldn't use it. For any of the generating slides and content and anything like that, absolutely not.
No.
So really, unfortunately, as much as I would want it to be true, it isn't really that useful for pre-sales as it stands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really hoping that would change, but I would be really curious because I know a lot of folks have embedded some sort of integration into their product, especially the pre-sales tool. I would be really curious to know the use rate of them.
So would I. Now, it's interesting because I was listening yesterday to an episode of We the SCs that Ramsey hosts, and the conversation there was really around, is AI going to replace pre-sales? I mean, in particular, the person he was speaking to, Anthony Palmosi, who is a BDR but also has been an SE in the past, was like, is it going to replace the BDR role? Conclusion, which I broadly agree with, is no, it's going to augment it. And it will be the people that get replaced. People are not going to get replaced by AI or generative tools in this profession. You're going to get replaced or superseded by those that are using the tools. Because the challenge with it, so the problem at the moment with it, at least, and this is my other hot take, is that at the moment, a lot of AI uses is just rebranded robotic process automation. It's just UiPath, but with a different kind of skin on it. Because you're just saying, go and do, and I think, again, that's the application I see in a lot of software. That's all it's doing. It's RPA. It's things like saying, really basic example, PO to invoice matching. Right, that's not really even RPA. That's just like inbuilt automation, but it's kind of a little bit of a slight spin on some automation. It's not really doing anything that smart. At the moment, at least, it requires the response to be binary. So if you look at like how it's used in help systems, where you have, and again, like maybe like a chat support system, right? Where you can get pushed down a specific path. There's an evolution on top of that. I mean, that's not, it's not necessarily kind of removing a role that was going to people before, because you know what? Like, again, we had RPA, we had algorithms, we had directional processing where it would just say, here's a list of things, which topic do you want to talk about? Oh, hey, you told me these things. This is what I think you're asking about. And it's kind of augmenting that, but that doesn't really have any application to pre-sales. The only use case that I've seen it in, and kind of this thing of, it's not, you can't rely on it. You can't just go, hey, tell me what these people care about. It's about using it to say, here is some data that I need to understand better. Please tell me about it. Please summarize it for me. Here is a research paper. Here is a quarterly report, an annual report from a company that I'm targeting. Or here's their last 4 annual reports and their most recent quarterly report. Please give me the top 10 themes that are coming up in these. And that's an application it can be used for. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't just do everything for you. You have to still go and find that information. And you can feed it in and say, give me a summary, and you maybe save yourself that work of going and hunting through it and reading through it and trying to find those themes. Again, you can kind of still do find, you can find words, you can read the, if you just read the introduction, you'll probably get most of it. But, you know, there's maybe some nuance in that, right? There's maybe some nuance in there. Similarly, I've seen it with at work, trialing Copilot, like to summarize meetings. I've started using transcripts a lot more than meeting recordings because it's just, I can just read it. And Copilot, which is GPT, does have some kind of good use. And I think if I've missed a meeting, I want to go, is this worth me even going back to it? It will give me a summary. But I'm still kind of going, I'm not getting any value out of this. So I'm getting a summary of the meeting, but I'm not getting anything of any value that is worth enough that I mean, I look at it going, oh, that was completely pointless. Or more often I'm kind of going, maybe I think I still need to go and check it. So it's not yet good enough to be able to rely on.
You're stepping on the topic of, are meetings really useful? But that's a completely different rabbit hole. It's like if the summary of the meeting is useless, like I think it's also something about the meeting.
Yeah, we can.
One thing I was thinking as I was listening to you was around. I do think there is what, you know, again, I'm trying to be positive posy here. There is something there about natural language usage when it comes to things like, which I think is really good for some of us that are not incredibly technical when it comes to like, hey, can I program like a script for myself to do X, Y, and Z thing that I want to do? Maybe with enough Google Foo, I will be able to do that, which is what we've had to do so far. Which is fine, and some of us still have to do because, you know, GPT doesn't solve everything. But there is something there as a use case around, I want to do this automation. I have this task at work that is taking me loads amount of time. I've tried Googling it, doesn't work. What happens if I just throw a GPT? What's gonna happen? That's a use case for that set of tools that I'm actually quite happy because I have done it a couple of times. And I think it's more around this from, it helps again, clarify exactly what you're trying. Even if at the end, I'm just taking what GPT is saying and then putting it into Google and then finding my answer. Which again, I've also done. But it's about natural language, which is the way we speak, to process engineering language. Yes. Process engineering is a whole school of its own. It's very difficult. That's why there's a whole profession of like looking at, you know, not only IT processes, but like factorial processes. Mm-hmm. And how do we optimize these things and how do we make them work? It's really, really hard when you're not in that, yet you still would benefit greatly from the way that field approaches problems. I think that's a really good use case for, have you tried it like that?
Yeah, no, I do. I think, again, I kind of come back to try and, I mean, I think I've found the most use out of it when it's been like going, not a tangible use. And I think, again, it's maybe a lot of, for me, I have less use for it in the role that I'm in now than I maybe would have done 1, 2, 3 years ago. And that's because my role now, much less technical than it used to be. If this had come along 5 years ago when I was doing software implementation that required me to do moderate coding in JavaScript, this would have been a godsend. Because I spent, and again, even before that, when I was in technical support, and I spent hours on Stack Overflow, which anybody who has done any kind of developer or technical work will know, it's a forum where people come and say, hey, I have this bit of code that's not working. Can please help me fix it? Now, and that's a community. Now, again, GPT is not a surefire answer, but I have found it really helpful when I've gone, I am working in this code base. This is what I need to achieve. How do I code? Can you please code that for me? So I think that is useful because that is time saving. But what that still requires is you still have to understand how the code works. You have to kind of, to your point, you still kind of have to understand the intention of where you're trying to get to. And you have to, you can't just go dump it in GPT knowing nothing and then it will give you a perfect answer. You have to, and I don't think that given everything we know about how they've trained these models, and the limitation to the technology, again, maybe there's going to be a new GPU that's going to come along and all of a sudden they're going to completely transform everything and we'll be able to like be much more reliant. But I think there's still they're kind of a useful augmentation to what you're doing. It's not, we don't suddenly have Jarvis from the Iron Man films. No. Who's this like completely like full on intelligence. I think again, it's AI semantically is the wrong thing to call it. Because it's not...
It's the cool thing to call it.
Yeah, but it's not intelligence. It's not an intelligence. It's a processing tool. Processes data. That's what it does.
Yeah. Have you... I tried a while back, because, again, I was reading this somewhere, where a good use for these set of tools is Google replacement, right? Because especially as we're going down the rabbit hole, search engines are becoming more and more commercialized, even more... I can already hear people saying like, oh, don't use Google. It's like, but it's the most useful one still. Like, even with all the sponsorships and everything. I have tried using T as a replacement for Google search. It hasn't been a good replacement. But again, to my point, I think, in summary, like, everything that I'm thinking about, you know, as you know, trying to look at it as a positive, as a set of tools that at the moment are as they are right now, which, by the way, I feel like we're going to have to, like, re-record this episode in, like, you know, in 3 months' time and just go, like, oh, yeah, everything we spoke about in episode 10, absolutely not the case anymore, so this is how it is right now. But as things stand right now, the clear use case that I see for these tools is... clarifying thought, bouncing ideas off of someone who's never going to get tired of speaking to you, which I need, and then helping you with those processes. Once you clarify, once you have the ideas, or once you have a plan, how do you actually perform and set things in motion, and how do you create those processes? Because we spoke about, you know, coding, we spoke about creating, you know, courses, we talk about, there is a lot of things in there that you can, by just following those two, sort of like the three top things that I just mentioned. I think the tools we have right now, as they are, without over-glorifying anything else, having that generative text producement machine is quite useful for those in that part. And I really think, unfortunately, with all of the jazz and all of the everything else and all of the hype that was around it, I think that's silly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know if it's because I'm limiting, you know, I don't know enough, I don't get it enough. You know, again, maybe a tech bro is going to explain it to me how I'm missing the point. But really, we tried a lot of things, right? Like we tried, like both me and my partner tried many ways to how can we implement this in a techie way, right? Can mm-hmm, it do network mm-hmm. design? Can it do mm-hmm. Configurations? Does it understand enough? Does it have enough information for this? If we feed it information, can it still get it? Can it understand, like, the, you know, the TCP/IP stack? When it comes to coding, how much coding has it consumed? Has it gone through GitHub? Has it gone through Stack Overflow? How much? Again, it's various degrees, and you do need to know what you're doing to actually be able to use it. And that's why I keep on reverting back to those, you know, sort of three things on my head. Is like clarifying ideas, figuring out what the process is, and bouncing off ideas of someone for your own sake, because you need to know what you're doing for whatever topic you're looking into, to catch it when it's wrong, because it is wrong. And that's mm-hmm. it's in the statement. Nobody's expected to be perfect. But to go a little bit back further on what you said about, you know, support and chat and using it for like BDR communications, this is where my positivity goes away. If I'm mm-hmm. talking over email or over chat to ChatGPT, I don't want to be doing business with you. If you are BDR and you're sending, it's a completely different rabbit hole of like our BDRs and SDRs and an unfortunate state where they do need to do this because it's their job. Yes. Is ChatGPT potentially helping them? Maybe yes. Am I happy about it? Absolutely not.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it's interesting, and it's worth, and we'll link the episode that I'm talking about in the description, because it's a really interesting discussion from somebody who is in that position but doesn't feel threatened by it. And again, it's not a discussion right about using it to write emails, and yes, some people have tried that. I think fundamentally we are just not where I expected us to be with this technology at this point in time. Like, we're in the end of April 2024. And going back to November 2022, when GPT first was released to the public, and everyone got very excited about it, rightly so, it just doesn't feel like we've actually moved that far. And I think, again, it's this, if I look at blockchain, and again, I'll have the crypto bros coming after me next, but the underlying kind of idea in the technology of you know, blockchain and the ledger, this idea that you don't just have one record of something happening, you have many copies of the record happening. It's decentralized information, that is quite compelling. And I do think that there is a application somewhere in technology that does that. But I just think it's actually quite boring as well. I think these are all quite boring things. These aren't sexy, fancy, transformative uses. They're incremental changes in how we do things. But they're not setting the world on fire beyond having a fancy name and people either getting super excited that this is the future or catastrophizing about what this is going to mean. And I think, again, a story that I'll link in the description, which is Meta have obviously integrated AI into their ad platform. But the problem with it is that it's just kind of gone rogue and small businesses have seen their ad budgets get blown in 3 days for the whole year. Because AI just goes, we'll do this and this and this and this, and there's no kind of cap on it. And so it just doesn't really work, right? And there's stuff about it, and I think, again, you can go, and I don't go down the rabbit hole of too much, but do you know about the Humane AI pin?
No.
So the Humane AI pin is classic. It is a pin that you wear. It costs, I think, $799 and has a subscription. And the idea of it is it's AI assisted, and it's like you can point it at a thing.
The pin.
So you can point it at the pin. There's this like little device. It looks almost like a little like badge that you wear.
Right.
And it has a camera in it. And you might point it at, say, the Empire State Building, and you'll say, tell me what this is, and it will take a picture and it will go to the cloud. And it'll come back and go, that's the Empire State Building built in. Da, 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 da. Or you might pick up a food item. This is the use case. Please, we will link it. It is like one of the funniest things ever is their like pitch. You pick up a food item in the supermarket and it will say, tell me what I can make with this. And the fundamental problem, money with it, from all the reviews that I've read, is it just takes a really long time to actually process this stuff. And it's this promise of like this transformational use, and it's just not very good.
Yeah, but okay, so hold on. So this feels like a lot of those. Okay, hold on, step back. Was this is like a GoFundMe thing? Is this like a Kickstarter thing? There's a lot of okay. There's a lot of weird and wacky things on Kickstarter. Like there's no point in like they're there for a reason. They are an idea that someone has that hasn't been really well implemented, because that's how these things are, right? So I'm not gonna poo-poo on them just because that's the idea is not. The price is stupid. Let me be very clear.
Yeah.
The idea is not bad. I also don't think the implementation is great, but that just has to do with me, like, why does everything have to be cloud? Oh, because you need the resources, then you really shouldn't be doing what you're doing then, because if you're depending on a cloud service somewhere, like, you should. But that's, again, a completely different rant, and a lot of things fall into this category, including Ring doorbells and cameras and everything else. Like, this should not have a... Yes. Again, rabbit hole for a different time. Why Lydia hates cloud services. I'm in my... Like, the positivity has left the building. No. But seriously, though, on this thing, well, it's definitely a thing that you can sort of point and laugh and go like, ha ha ha, stupid tech bros, like, look at what they're doing. And people are buying. A lot of cool gadgets go this way before they get reiterated and fixed and figure out how to do. Right now, this feels like a what maybe Siri should be at some point. But isn't yet.
But it feels like... They've kind of it, the, and I feel the same way, interestingly enough, actually, about the Vision Pro, which is, again, different technology, and Paul's thing on why wearables probably are the future, but that kind of wearable is not, and there are some really good ones.
Yeah.
Is you look at the like trajectory of portable music players, you know, MP3 players, then you had the iPod, but the iPod did one thing and it did it very well, and that was you had like a 1,000 songs. And you could carry it around in your pocket, right? And at the time, it was like, what, I can have more than what I haven't got? It was a transformational thing. But it did a very simple thing very straightforwardly. I think the problem with a lot of, like, the AI in particular is it's, like, promising the earth, but not actually able to even deliver. It's like you're trying to build a city when you haven't figured out how to build a garden shed. And it's like, you need to just start small, start like with this thing. And I think, again, it's kind of comes back to where we're landing, really, right, with using LLMs and how we use them. If you look at it and go, I can use it to augment my research, to brainstorm what I'm going to do, to figure out processes, to help me troubleshoot a bit of code, to generate an Excel formula, right, and tell me how to use it. All very real things. And again, it's like stuff that you're maybe saving yourself one or two steps in a previous process. Like for me, I'm not very good at Excel formulas, but previously I'd just gone to Google and say, need an Excel formula for this, please.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can go to GPT and say, I want to do this, and it will probably give it to me, and it takes me a little bit of refinement, but I may get there like marginally quicker. Sometimes no quicker, but depends on the complexity of what I'm trying to do. But it's that, I think if you shrink the use case down, it becomes a lot more kind of applicable. And I think, again, I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, Logipharma in France, big pharmaceutical event and life sciences event, and there was lots of people there talking about AI uses, and the most compelling one, data analysis. It's going, we have all this information and we have no way of processing it. Can you please give it to me? And I think the analogy that I can't remember the presenter, but he used, he said, the way we're looking at it, he said, before you had electronic library catalogues where you could sit at a computer and search for a book, you would have to go to the note cards. And before you had note cards, you'd have to go through the whole building. The information doesn't change, it just becomes easier to get to it.
Yeah.
And that's what AI is doing. It's making the information, you have to get easy to get to.
That's very fair. I know there's a similar problem with archaeology, for example, as well, where the problem is not that we're not digging out enough things, is that we have so many things that we need to cater the information about and make conclusions and actually use that research data actively, that I can imagine that's also a real use case for tools like that. When you are, but again, then we're not talking about AI, we're not talking about GPT, then we're talking about private AI, which is a different thing entirely.
Mm.
And that's really where companies like NVIDIA, like VMware by Broadcom, that's where a lot of these companies are looking into, how do we bring private AIs? It's a lot about like people, healthcare in the UK are talking about AI as well, but they're not talking about GPT. They are talking about private AI, which is, do you have this model? We understand how it works. It's isolated from the rest of the world. We're going to feed it this, you know, data set. And it's only going to be able to respond based on this data set. It's not going to be able to do correlations with anything else. It's not going to be doing anything else. This is all it has. And that it already is going to be massively helpful for individual companies. Then the problem is always, when it comes to these things, scale. How much, you know, computing power do you need? How much do you need this? And that's where things like GPT are so, because they're cheap at the end of the day. It's someone else's servers. It's someone else's data set. It's someone else's, you know, GPUs that you're using. But at the end of the day, you pay, well, it's very obvious what you pay with. You pay with the data that you're inputting and subscription. But it's most of the data that you're inputting. That's why it's so cheap. Because they're not covering costs via subscriptions, right? They are covering costs via the information that they are actually intaking. Because every piece, by the way, for folks that are not aware, every piece of data that you put into the, you know, GPT chat is saved forever with them. It's gone. Like, so no confidential information, no like secrets, no nothing. Don't put anything in there.
I mean that happened really early on, didn't it? When there was like a Samsung engineer put like proprietary code in.
People still do it. People still do it. So really, private AI is the only way really going forward for these companies to be able to operate. What you were saying there around research with pharmaceuticals, that is, no pharmaceutical company is ever going to share that information, you know, by themselves. Like, they will have to have something in-house, internal to them, black box, completely isolated from the world, military style, right? That's the only way. And not because they're worried it's going to escape. It's more around how easy it is for people to make the mistake of like crossing the wires and doing like, oh, actually, I put this information versus, you know, into our own internal AI tool. This is why, again, maybe the topic for another time, why I think on-premises data centers and everything else is going to make a comeback very soon. Because I do truly believe in that. I think cloud services and cloud providers are, they're here to stay and they're here to serve a function. but most big enterprises are going to move away from, and going to go back to having their own data centers. But that's that when I said it out loud, that sounds like the most boring topic we can have for it. But hey, it's tech!
It's tech.
I know it's not sexy. I know it's not AI. But hey, look, networking is super important. Hey, listen, I'm gonna beat this drum until I can't no more. Like, it is cool.
It's funny. Sure. Yeah, because I think AI is not sexy, but we've just spent like the last hour or so going, yeah, AI is actually not that sexy. It's just really great when you don't want to read a bunch of repetitive stuff.
Yeah.
But I think all the applications we're talking about, healthcare, right? Which is again, this is a natural progression of technology in these spaces. And again, I think if it comes back to, if we want to talk about kind of being positive, and I've actually got a, you know, there's another use case for AI that I'm going to be an AI enabled tool that I'm going to be trialing, and I'll tell you about that shortly. But this is so in healthcare, this is a natural progression of the direction technology was already taking. So we've already gone from like 200 years ago, the invention of the X-ray, the ability to see inside someone's body without cutting into it, right? Looking at broken bones, looking at fractures. We've kind of moved, and now we can now see that more clearly. We can now do more prediction around what that might cause. We can now use MRIs, X-rays, all these kind of ultrasounds, all these kind of ways of looking inside the human body without doing any trauma to it. And then learning, and then going, well, based on the learnings, we can see this. And then we're training each other as people. Where back that kind of, again, this the underlying technology of what drives things like GPT, what drives Gen AI models, you feed all that data in, you feed in however many million scans and say, these are all examples of brain cancer. That then means that you can say, now I'm going to connect this to the scanner and it will be able to, you know, look at the patterns in all this data that you've given me and find, you know, predictive examples. And that is a direction that, you know, the technology was kind of going in already. It's not this transformative, all of a sudden we've overnight changed things.
It was already happening, right? There were already models and you know, algorithms in place to do a lot of these predictions.
Mm.
So
it's just rebranded, it's algorithms. We've talked about algorithms for however long, every social media. The algorithm, that's AI. AI is algorithms.
Again, not so sexy when you actually address
not it. Not so sexy. Like, and this is taking me back to my days studying when I for some reason, I did all, it's A-levels in the UK, but it's what you study when you're between 16 to 18. And you do like four subjects at most, maybe most people do three. I did mathematics for some reason. And I did a module which was called decision maths. And my problem with it is that my brain doesn't work in the right way because it's all about algorithms. It's all literally this, like, this happens then this, if not this. And it's like, that's process piece. So it's funny, whenever people talk about the algorithm as this kind of unembodied thing, it's like, no, it's just taking data and making decisions based on it. And you tweak how the data changes. And I think people understand that, but that's kind of, again, that's what we're seeing with generative.
I think the magic behind, like, why does it look like magic right now? It's because it's a black box. Because we don't, we really don't, and it's a black box on purpose. Because you put things in, you don't know really what the expected result is coming out. Mm. Because you've programmed it. And I think that's why there's such a, again, like, feeling of magic. Of like, ooh, you know, there's something special is coming. That's why the intelligence comes in. That's why so many people can really be tricked into this idea of it is actual intelligence, because we don't know how. What do you mean we don't know how it works? It's like, I mean, feasibly we can figure out how it works, but really it's not why did it make the decision always based on so many things that we don't, again, it's a very I'm trying to summarize, like, and make simple a very complex topic here. Which I myself am not a professional in to be able to do that, so that's why I'm trying to steer a little bit away from it. But I think all in all, with everything that we've spoken about, with this idea of, like, we don't really know what's happening in this black box, we don't really know. The most important thing is, whatever this model, whatever this algorithm is doing, however they're doing it, however it's crunching the information and giving it back to you, the most important thing, like, all data science, all of this stuff, is what information is coming in, what is it learning from, and where does it, and what is coming out. Because there's this whole idea in data science about, like, you know, crap in, crap out, you know, good data in, good data out. It's the same idea. And that's why I'm a huge proponent. And it might be, again, my background with, you know, said companies. But the whole idea of private AI is the only real thing that I can point my finger to and go, like, this is cool. And I want to see people using this because this makes sense to me. Because again, we use the healthcare example, we use the pharmaceutical example, we're going to keep on using enterprise and coding example. This is how things are. You feed it the data that you know it's good because you have been curating it and you've been collecting it, or it comes from a trusted source, and you don't let anyone else touch it other than you internally and for yourself. But then where does that leave GPT? Where does it leave these publicly available algorithms? I really think the only, and the, I sort of as part of the, as we were talking, like, it actually came to me as a summary, which is, I think it's best used for figuring out and dealing with the unknown unknown. When you don't know what you don't know, you want to do something. I want to head north, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever north means, potentially a tool like GPT is going to help me figure out which road to take.
Yeah.
So unknown unknowns. That's the only use case really that I can summarize and say, like, that's the only thing that I can think of for these public algorithms.
The only other one, and I actually just have, and I will link in the show notes, is this meme that has just cropped up, which I think is fantastic. I clicked over while you were talking, and this meme just came up. Describe it, can't see it. It's the four fastest things on Earth: a cheetah, an airplane, the speed of light, people becoming experts in AI. So, just to kind of caveat, neither of us, I don't think at any point we've claimed to be experts in AI. But it does highlight this thing of, like, people kind of going, and I just searched as we were kind of talking, like, I was like, oh, I'll have a look at, like, you know, I'm connected to a few people that and have some mutual connections of people that are, like, in AI. And I've seen one which is like, automatically generate MQLs using AI. And I'm like, but that doesn't work. You can't just, you know, what are you doing on the back of that? And I think it's this big flashy promise. What it actually does... And so I guess, like, again, my takeaway is that I'm not totally down on this. I think it's a really interesting technology. I just think that we've massively overestimated what it can do and the speed at which it's going to make that change. And maybe one other use case that's kind of come to mind just as you were talking with the creative side. And this is something I'm going to go away and I'm going to make a commitment, and we'll come back to this in an episode or two, which is to try it to be a way of creating writing prompts. So when I'm going, I have some things I want to write. I'm creating, and again, it's the hardest part of writing is starting. And when I say, right, I've got a newsletter that is focused on the kind of the side of tech sales, pre-sales. It's called Tech Sales Unplugged, so it's meant to be kind of lower key, not meant to be like really like up to the minute. It's those sort of longer term topics. Give me 10 things that I can write about. That's probably quite a good use case, because it's going to go, what are people talking about? Here are some topics. And then I can take that as a prompt. And I think it's how we talked about the LinkedIn AI stuff. You know, it's the last episode, or even the episode before, of not contributing to the AI articles themselves, but taking the prompts that they create and using them as a kind of jumping off point. And I think that, again, it's this massive data mine, and you can extract stuff out of it. I've actually got a use case that I am going to try. I maybe won't try it before the next recording because I have a holiday coming up very soon. But it keeps getting advertised to me, and I'm like, you know what? You've got me interested. And it's called Motion, which I'm not sure if you've seen.
I've tried.
Okay. Should I even try?
I think you should.
Okay.
I think with a lot of these things, right, these are, you're trying out, you know, you're getting into running, you're trying out different types of shoes. This is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to figure out what's best. It didn't fit the way I work. I'll check in on you. We'll do a follow-up in a couple episodes, because I would be interested.
Yeah.
Like when you're back from holiday, and just live with it for a bit, see how it works, and let me know how it is. I might give it another chance.
So for people that don't know, it's a... Okay, we're not sponsored, but we could be. But we're not. Let's see how it goes. It's a task management scheduling app that uses, you know, kind of brands itself as automated scheduling and planning with AI. Quite what the difference between that and like what Microsoft Viva does when it books me focused on my calendar when it sees breaks, I don't know. But we've talked about productivity in a previous episode. I am... you really into Doist, and I really like it as a, hey, create a list of tasks, But part of, and I've, you know, posted now, if you go back to the start of April on my LinkedIn about my own neurodiversity, one of the things that really struggles with is actually like scheduling stuff and blocking in time. I'm very good at going, here are all the things I have to do, but where I have more difficulty is actually going and executing those things. And that for me, that's the problem that I'm looking for a solution to, is putting in, is someone to tell me, here's all your list of things, me to go, here's everything I brain dump, everything I have to do. And then if this is almost like a virtual assistant, PA, saying, okay, here's all your work, here's when you need to do it.
Caveat to that, because I don't know if you, well, do you, you don't hyperschedule now, do you? You don't time block. No. That's going to be a steep learning curve for you. Because that's what it does. Yeah. So technically, that's what it, so I do that on my, so I practically, to give you like a little bit of background why I didn't actually use it all that much, is because I do that manually, right? Because mm-hmm. what that system doesn't know from the get-go and requires a lot of finicky and sort of like teaching it how to do is, at what time would I feel most productive? At what time mm-hmm. would I want to do this? Is it going to be nice weather tomorrow? Is it going to, so that I would want to go for a walk instead of actually spending 3 hours in front of a PC? Do I want to be doing this? Do I want to do, it doesn't have the nuances of what your life looks like. So it's quite right. prescriptive in that sense. Which, by the way, all hyperscheduling and all like sort of time blocking is very prescriptive. You don't have to follow it to the T. Mm-hmm. I found it just at the time when I was giving it a go. It's like, this is my Google Calendar with more steps, which I didn't really appreciate. So that was my experience. I wonder, and I would be really curious to see if this gets you into time blocking. Because what you're saying with the struggle of, you know, because again, I had a very similar problem to you. Like, I had this whole big list of things that I wanted to achieve and never had the time of it. And that list is ever growing. So I found that, and we had a long conversation about this during the productivity episode. But in really, it was that mapping of tasks to calendar events with a rough estimation of how long I think those are going to take that really helped me with figuring out how I, you know, do things throughout the day. Let's see if this tool helps you figure out that process as well. I would be really, really curious.
I think it's interesting because I don't do time blocking. Yes. But when yet, I have kind of tried it. My problem is even just I just cognitively have an issue with the sitting down and going, I will do these tasks at this time.
Right. Yeah. And that
helps
you.
And that's maybe what I'm looking for, is it's kind of going, I think all the things that you said, feeding that information, I think if you're naturally able to time block, you probably don't need this. But that's, again, I think also where I am hoping it can help is where I have lots of meetings, lots of calls, and I go, right, and I come out the call and go, got an hour now, what can I do? Right. And actually having something that says focus, like take a 10-minute break and then do this, is what I need. And if I can automate that piece of kind of me saying, it's going to take me an hour to do this report, it's going to take me half an hour to do this, I need to have 20 minutes. There's actually kind of like stuff in my day, in my week, that's quite repetitive, right? Looking at my team's assignments, making sure that all the deals are covered. That's repetitive stuff. And I have kind of, quote unquote, time blocked it by having recurring reminders in my to-do list to check my emails twice a day. But it's kind of going, I'm not very good at sticking to those things. So I kind of want something to take away the effort of planning. And then if I stick to it, it might be that it gets me enough in the habit that I go, hey, you know what? Within 6 months, I can junk this tool. But in reality, I actually find myself kind of thinking, what's the question I'm asking? The question I'm asking is, how do I become more effective at planning out my day around my increased volume in meetings with a number of repetitive tasks and then also lots more one-off tasks? So we'll see. So there we are. So we've had 10 episodes now, and we need to say, and we've kind of covered this, what's next? Your start, which is, it's been great having a co-host for 10 episodes, which is either we're stopping doing it or you're going to go and get somebody else. You're like, oh, thanks, Paul, for 10. I'm going to go find another new co-host.
Yeah, great working with you.
Yeah.
see your demo first, I guess.
But yeah, I made a note, which was, that was our like milestone. And I think, as you said, we knew we were going to get to this by hook or by crook. The question that people might be asking is, are you going to continue? Well, I think we've kind of spoiled that because I've just said yeah in a couple of episodes. So I think we're going to get to at least 12.
Yeah, at the minimum. No, the goal, the next goalpost, and I think that's going to be the ever-moving goalpost, is 21. Because I read somewhere that 1% of all podcasts, only 1% of all podcasts go to episode 21. So that's why in my head I was like, yes, we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next step. And then thereafter, we'll see. But
we'll see again.
Right now, this works. I'm happy. You're happy. I guess, I hope.
I am, yeah.
Good.
The other question is, are we ever going to have guests on the podcast?
No.
I was going to say maybe.
No.
Not in the regular show, no.
No, not in the regular.
No.
So, again, things may change. Your mileage may vary with us. But in these normal episodes, we're not planning on having guests. And I've always had a lot stronger opinion than Paul, I think, on this topic, where I think I'm going to sound so full of myself, and I know. The sanctity of what the show is, which is this conversation between you and me and the silent listener. I think there's something quite magical and nice about it, where the dynamic completely changes. It might be for the better or for the worse, but it is different when the guest comes in. Because suddenly it's now not us having a conversation, it's going to be us interviewing this other, us having like a... It's a natural format of these shows. What will happen most likely, and we're gonna do our best to sort of plan it out like that, is to have special occasion episodes where we do have guests over for different events, if we do in person, for different things that we're planning to do, fun events that we're planning to do. For those, I'm more than happy for folks to join in and have a conversation with us then. Preferably, and again, it's a little bit of a spoiler of what we're planning to do ahead, but it's most likely going to be live. So we would, again, my vision is to rent a space in London and just sit down on those comfy couches that they have in those recording spaces and just have a chat with folks, be it one or two, however many people it makes sense for us at the time, depending on the topic. But that's really, when it comes to guests, that will be the only time. So either people are very happy to hear that or very unhappy to hear that. Hey, a decision was made.
It was. Yeah, and I think that I would say, yeah, Lydia's right. I felt less strongly at the start, but I agree. And I think it's something that we... Thank you for those people that have expressed interest in being a guest, and never say never, I would say, but never in this kind of format. On that note, though... And here's a teaser. There may be some other ways that if you're wanting to become more involved or perhaps ask a question, then watch this space, because there's some stuff that might be coming in between now and episode 21 that might help facilitate that. So,
yay!
But for now, it will continue to be myself and Lydia. We're both committed to another 11 episodes. At least.